With me now is Stéphane LeBlanc. He is the CEO and co-founder for the International Center for Conscious Leadership, and he brings over 25 years of experience as a senior executive in very influential positions in large international organizations. He is deeply committed to the transformation of leaders and the elevation of consciousness in organizations all over the world. And a big part of his work is he creates experiential events to help leaders transform so that they can become the best version of themselves and impact their organizations in a positive and sustainable way. Stéphane, thanks so much for joining us. I'm really excited to have you on the call.
Thanks for having me, and I'm also equally excited.
Well, first thing I just want to note for people before we get into kind of you and your vision and what you're up to, you did recently, just this year, you put on a pretty big summit, on like a virtual summit I'm doing here. You put on an actual live summit. What was that summit about?
It was called the Global Summit for Conscious Leadership. You know, when you're the first one to do something, you can call it whatever you want. So I call it the Global Summit. Because my intention, this will be a yearly event, and it was a truly international. We had speakers from India, U.S., Europeans, so, and it was held in Montreal, and something that people may or may not know, there is an institute called the Barrett Value Center, and they assess cultures around the world, corporate cultures, but also country cultures, and they assess that Canada is number 7 in the world in terms of level of consciousness. And if you ever visited Canada, you know, we're pretty kind people, we're good values, you know, respectful people, and so we're right behind the Scandinavian countries and people like that. And my intention, because we're a bit bigger, you know, 30-something million, I think we can play a key role in raising consciousness in business around the world. So my personal intention is that Canada becomes one of the key players, you know, to raise consciousness around the world through our values. You know, so we're not the biggest force, we're not the biggest economic power, but we could be the people with the best values. So we had for the first event, and we had 240 people coming in a room for one day to talk about conscious leadership. So it was quite a breakthrough event for us.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, so because my mother is Canadian, that means that I am like only half asleep. I'm American, so basically half of me is awake. I don't know which half, but let's hope. Well, so what's your big vision for positive impact? I mean, I kind of described a little bit of it, but what's your why? What is it that gets you out of
bed? My why is I used to be a pure capitalist like many of us. You know, I used to work for a large manufacturing company in aerospace, and I used to run big business. I used to, you know, lead 3,000 people, about $2.5 billion revenue. And, you know, I used to build planes for the richest people in the world. So I loved it. If you're an engineer like me, an MBA, you know, you like operations, building these toys is quite special. And then 12 years ago, I got a new boss. You know, I was a young general manager, and a new boss came in and says, you know, Stéphane, we love your results. They're really outstanding, but I think your people skills are not so good. You could improve that. And I wasn't a mean person. I was just very demanding. Because, you know, in aerospace, it's very costly what you build. So it reminds me of technology where there's no time wasted. You know, everything is fast-paced. And I'm wired like that. You know, I think I have a good brain. My body, you know, I'm always in high-speed mode. So I kind of shocked me. You know, I was destined to be a future president, you know, one of these high potential. So to get a review from my boss, you know, a 2 out of 5, well, I always got 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5, it really shocked me. And this man was very wise because, you know, he says, you know, I'm not assessing you from where you come from. I'm assessing you versus your true potential. And he says, if you don't transform your human leadership, you will never achieve your goals of being a senior executive. So I went on a walk, and when you go on a walk, you find things. And I discovered transformational leadership at that time. This is 12 years ago. And I used it to truly transform myself and my way of being as a leader. And I'm saying way of being because I discovered that as a true leader, your way of being is more important than what you do. Because let's just be honest, if you're a senior VP, you actually produce nothing. You know, you talk to people and you listen to them. Most of what you do is gets done by other people. I'm quite good at sending emails, but other than that, you know, making PowerPoint presentations. So I discovered that the way I was as a person, the way I showed up, had a huge role to play in how my team was being led. And then, you know, life gave me the assignments. In 2008, I became a VP for the first time at 42 years old of a business unit that had been struggling for 9 years. You know, it probably lost $250 million in 9 years. And 9 VPs had been fired before me. And the only guy that survived is the man that promoted me. Who's the guy who, you know, put me in my place 4 years before? And he promoted me because of my new way of being. And, you know, when I got this promotion, I went home and I said to my wife, how am I going to survive this? Because it was a daunting task, you know. And I was inspired to lead in a different way, created a transformational vision, enrolled 3,000 people, and, you know, got things done. And 22 months later, we made $50 million. And we increased employee engagement, customer satisfaction, health and safety. Everything was improved. So people ask me after, you know, and nobody really helped me, I mean, besides my team. There was nobody from HR, no guru coming to tell me what to do. It was truly inspired from, you know, inspired leadership. And so people ask me, what did you do? I said, I tell you what I did is I loved people in my team like they had never been loved before. I did that with customers. I truly found that I needed to become the best people developer. Because, you know, I love sports. I'm not very good at sports, but I love sports because I think sports is a good analogy of life. You know, in a two-hour game, you get a whole life, you know, and when you watch these players go through the emotions. And I discovered that I needed to develop people to their full potential. And this way, I would win with them the mission. And so I call this now conscious leadership, but at the time, it was my discovery on transformational leadership. And I've done 3 major business operational transformation where breakthrough results were achieved. And I've been able to become a catalyst for people's growth, you know, taking a manager to, you know, one of them is running a big electricity company as a president. So this is what I found out 3 or 4 years ago. You know, I was operational type, you know, vice president, general manager, running a business unit, but what I truly love every day was to develop people. So a year and 3 months ago, I decided to make it my career. And so my mission is, you know, I have a business, I'm incorporated and everything, but it is truly a calling, a mission. My mission is to be a catalyst for leaders to transform, for them to rise to their full potential so they can create cultures where people thrive, so we can elevate consciousness in business, so we can co-create a promising future for all our great, great, great grandkids, which is right now, if you happen to watch what's going on in the world, is not a guarantee. You know, it's I think that humanity is in a very precarious situation. It's the only species that's killing every other species and destroying its own habitat. So to me, we have a crisis of leadership, and it's a crisis of consciousness. So until we rise in consciousness, we'll never solve the problems that we have. And so that's what I'm dedicating my life to, is to be a catalyst for leaders to transform, for them to embark on a journey to transform their organization so we can transform humanity.
And you've alluded a little bit, and I do want to get into some practical stuff later. Important to me in this summit that people walk away with really tactical, practical things.
Yes.
We'll get to that later. But for now, you talk about this transformation and this, and you've alluded to a few things about that transformation. But what are these new leadership capacities that you think are required to lead well in a world like ours? Which you know, again, a part of the theme of this summit is around massive disruptive transformation from the influx of new technologies, which are radically transforming everything. What's your sense of what are those new capacities? What is it that you think people need to cultivate in themselves?
What we need to cultivate first is to be human. You know, to become a conscious leader, you first need to be good to yourself. I've been a senior executive, and I tell you what, it is a journey of sacrifice. Nobody ever gets to be a CEO without sacrificing health often, family, hobbies. And it is, I mean, I remember it used to be like I was in a war zone. It's so difficult, quarter end results, because business, especially the public business, you know, public incorporated companies will always take everything they got. Competition is fierce. It's never enough. never enough. There's never breathing time. And what I found is that Daniel Goleman co-wrote a book called Resonant Leadership. A lot of leaders become in dissonance. You know, they no longer have their A game. They're not in flow anymore. And their leadership gets impacted. So if you look at what's going on in the world now, the younger generations, you know, they don't want to go work for a company that doesn't have a purpose, that is grander than just making money. I mean, there probably are a few millennials that will go to become investment bankers just for money. But I meet a lot of young people. They are already awakened to what's going on, and they want to choose to work for a company that, you know, they respond to their values and they respond to their the purpose. You know, they want to realize their own vision through the company. So I think for a leader to be a conscious leader, to embrace conscious leadership, which to me is the only paradigm that would allow companies not only to survive but to thrive in the future, is you need to first be conscious. What does that mean? You need to be present. You need to take care of yourself. You need to be in tune with what you actually feel. See, a lot of the work we're going to talk later about practicality. One way to rise in consciousness is to face with courage your fear and your limiting beliefs, you know, which is all things that we inherited from our parental and societal conditioning. We all have wounds from our past. Most of them have never faced those, so they're in our subconscious, which means that most people in leadership use the world, people, nature to fulfill their own needs, to make money, to get the bonus, to rise. And to grow in consciousness, to rise, you need to heal so you can actually get to a place where you can actually focus on other people, focus on the future, not just focus on quarter results. So the first step I would say is to become conscious is mindfulness, to be present to what is there in you, in your environment, and in others. I was not always the best. You know, I love technology. I have, you know, an iPhone like everyone, and I would be in a meeting and I'd be on my phone. So I was never really where I was. I was always in the future because there's so much demands on leaders. And sometimes I was in the past, you know, I was triggered by a comment by a colleague, and this had nothing to do with him, it had everything to do with me, and I would get upset. So I would say the first is to be conscious of who you are, what's inside you, to heal some of your past fears and limiting beliefs, so you can actually be present and not be stuck in the past. So that's a first example. But there's also the capacity to be a visionary leader. You know, how can you lead people if you have no clue where you're trying to go? You know, if you're a boat in a lake with no rudder, you'll get somewhere, but unpredictably, probably not where you want to go. And I've worked for many leaders, and it was sometimes for me very difficult to know where they're trying to go. And when you have hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people, and the vision of the leader is not very clear, we're not going to get anywhere. And this vision nowadays has to be very inspirational. It has to touch people's heart. You know, maximizing shareholder value is not a vision. You know, it's an end result of something else. And some of the great companies that are, you know, good examples for conscious leadership, Old Foods, Patagonia, Southwest, Eileen Fisher, these companies, when you read their vision, when you listen to their leaders, it really touches your heart. You know, you really want to get up in the morning early and go to that. So it reminds us of, you know, and unfortunately, sad moments of humanity, but great moments for some people, you know, and in crises, you know, like in the U.S. after the flood in Texas or World Trade Center, people getting together for a common cause, you know. Nobody worrying about how much money I'm going to make with that. I'm just serving what needs to be served. I think we can have the same level of commitment from people in business if we create a vision that's really touching people's hearts. So those are just two examples, you know. Mindfulness, being present to what is, healing some of our fears and limiting beliefs, and having the ability to set a very clear, inspiring vision to touch people's hearts.
Beautiful. So one of the things that I know you wrote about is this notion that organizations can actually become a place of healing.
Yes.
And I think that's a pretty profound way of thinking about things. I share your mission and vision in life also, and do similar work with leaders. And one of the things that I find interesting is there are moments when I realize that my role in organizations and with leaders is often just as a healer, which is kind of a weird thing to say when you're talking about leadership development and organizational design and all that, but healing. What is a kind of a tactical example of how that might show up in an organization? From your perspective, if I'm a leader of a system or a company or some kind of organization, and I hear this notion that an organization could become a place of healing and that's really actually important, how would I do that? What would I do to bring that about?
The first thing I recommend leaders when they want to affect change in terms of conscious leadership is to most leaders have a regular staff meeting or management meeting once a week, once every 2 weeks. And usually those things are full, busy, let's get business done. I tell people to once every 2 weeks to take a breather, to start the meeting with a check-in. Give everyone in their team 1, 2, 3 minutes to just check in as a human. You know, a lot of these meetings are held on Mondays. And I've done that for 12 years, and I allow everyone to check in. This is how I am. I had a great weekend, or my weekend wasn't so good. My son's in the hospital. I have issues with just to create a safe space for people to check in as humans. And you might think that you might, waste 15 minutes. You will see the exponential increase in productivity and connection with the team. So to me, an example is as simple as that, is to create a safe space for people in your team to show up as humans. Very often in big businesses, we're so busy that we take people's brains, or in a factory, we take people's hands, but we don't take the whole person. What if this person today has issues because their mom is, we all have complex lives, couples issues, kids issues. Like my son's been in the hospital for 3 days now. He has and luckily my wife has time to care for him. But we all carry these things, huh? And I found that if I'm welcome as a complete person, then I'm going to give my best to this leader, because there's like a sense of loyalty that gets built. You treat me like a human, I'm going to give you my heart and my brain and everything I have to give. So that's a practical example to create safe space.
I love that. That's really
for people to check in and be humans.
What I love about it is it's simple. I don't have to be an expert to figure out how to do that. You're literally just saying you create a container, and it's a very, very small container, 15-minute container that can save you 10 times the amount of emotional drama and energy and lost productivity. It sounds really beautiful.
Another thing I would say, too, is every time I came to lead a new team, I always did a 2-day retreat. And most of these retreats in corporation are full of PowerPoint presentations, strategic planning, and all this thing. And I always surprised my team because we did none of that. We all came as a team for 2 days. We did all sorts of crazy things, created a vision board. My only goal was to lower the water level in terms of all the masks that we wear, so we would become like really intimate. And sports teams do that really, really well. Because of their training camps. When the season starts, all these players, obviously they take showers naked together. I'm just saying these guys become like a tight unit. Because nobody ever wins at the world class level if they're not a tight unit. Huh? And I found that if you lead a team and you bring people together for 1 or 2 days and allow them to be humans and do fun things to connect, I think the team intimacy will reflect itself in terms of the leadership productivity and after.
And isn't it fascinating that the kind of the odd paradox that most of us who have been leading in organizations get ourselves into, which is the clock is ticking and there's this great intensity and momentum around we have to extract every moment of value out of every second we possibly can. And if I don't see immediate value, I don't want to use my time that way. And what you're describing is so counterintuitive to what we've been trained in organizational life. And yet my experience, and you've demonstrated this well, is it has the exact opposite impact we think it would have. It is the opposite of a waste of time. It actually adds hours to your life, both personally and corporately. You somehow, some way, it actually produces more hours. And it sounds like that you've found that.
But you know why? I study a lot quantum physics, not the actual formulas because nobody can understand them, but the the application to leadership. And I read somewhere that in quantum physics, time doesn't exist. It's an invention of humans to live in this world. And when you are in leadership, when you're truly aligned and everyone's aligned, things happen magically on the spot. And the thing is, I find is if you create these bonds, I mean, I saw at a conference the coach of the Seattle Seahawks with his psychologist coach who taught mindfulness meditation to all the players. I can't remember his name. He used to work in California at the university, and he says it was all about, his vision was one breath. If all my, you know, linebackers and linemen, because in sports, you know, football, you make a 65-yard pass, it's a fraction of a second, you know, an inch. And he says, true connection, if we can all operate as one. And, you know, by the way, the Navy SEALs do that. When they go on a mission, they meditate together. They walk for an hour so they can connect as a unit, and then they don't even need to use their voice. They're so connected, just with their eyes, they can, you know, sign to each other and do the mission. And we all know some of these accomplishments that they've achieved in terms of some of the world we live in. So I've always been on a quest to achieve that in the corporate world, and I've achieved it many times. And it all comes through building this intimacy between the players. It doesn't mean that they all go out after work to have dinner all the time together. No, but it means that when they're at work, they're connected. And there's no, as minimum politics as possible, as maximum intimacy between the teams. So yeah, you're right. It might look like a waste of time. You're actually saving years in terms of team cohesion.
And you are creating magic. I mean, that's the other thing that people don't realize is you cannot orchestrate, no matter how brilliant you are as an individual, you could not conduct or orchestrate the symphony required to achieve the goals you have. You have to submit to a kind of process that brings about synchronicity, magic, creativity that you couldn't force. But if you know the tools, it's actually easily done for you. The system, the larger quantum system, does it for you. And it's really beautiful. Thank you. Okay, so a couple of other, kind of one other big conceptual question, and then I want to get into some really tactical stuff. So another observation I have in working with senior leaders is, and this is maybe a bit of a controversial statement, but I'm going to make it anyway. I actually observed that many women are, in some cases, I would estimate about 100 years ahead of men developmentally. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that they're not smarter or better necessarily. It's just what I mean by that is we live and have lived in a patriarchal society for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And men have been rewarded for being masculine and have typically been punished for expressing feminine attributes. Mm-hmm. Whereas women who come into the world and are expected to express feminine attributes have also been rewarded for expressing masculine attributes.
Yep.
So when they take on masculine elements and roles, and so women as a consequence, I have found, seem to have greater access, not always, not in every woman, but in general, greater access to both their masculine and their feminine resources. And I find that most men, especially in corporate settings, as they climb ladders, tend to have limited access to feminine resources. And one of the things I know you write about is this notion of whole person leadership requires access to both the feminine and the masculine. And and given that, what's a practical way? If I'm, let's say, a woman, and I know that I'm kind of managing all these double standards, and sometimes I might want to suppress my feminine side because I think I'm getting rewarded as a masculine person, or if I'm a man and I just have never really accessed my feminine side. I wouldn't even know where to start. Do you have thoughts on that? How can men and women, knowing that they both possess both, how can they begin to access what I sense is the rise of the feminine attribute? Not female, not gender, not genital, just feminine energy, access, resource. How do they do that?
It's a great question because I actually think that feminine women leaders are naturally more conscious. And it's biological, you know, because even though women never had kids, biologically they're more nurturing, they're more, you know, if you go back centuries ago, the men went to hunt, you know, and the women kept the community alive. So women are naturally more connectors and all this. I've embraced the feminine side of my personality 10, 12 years ago. It has made me a much better leader, because you know, there's time to be a warrior, there's time to be a nurturer. And it's like playing golf, you know, there's 13 clubs, you don't have to use only one. And it's like playing golf and you only have your long clubs, you know, you don't have the short game, you know, you're pretty weak. And I fully echo what you said. The drama in society is that we are working really hard to promote more women in leadership. Very often they have to respond to the masculine side of running the business, so we don't get the full benefit. And it sometimes it creates a bit of trauma. So I think that the best way is for people to actually get familiar that we both have both energies in us. And I have to tell you, in my coaching, 85% of my clients naturally are women. They're attracted to this concept of conscious leadership. And I'm not surprised, because it is, you know, universal consciousness, the universe, trying to get the feminine energy to rise. And we don't have anything to do to allow the feminine to rise. We just have to stop stopping it. You know, it wants to rise naturally.
Okay? Interesting. Yeah, interesting.
You have nothing to do.
It so how rises. Do I stop it? How do I stop myself from stopping it? If I'm a man,
I think we have to have a serious conversation with men. Okay, it's pretty traumatic with a lot of men. I did a workshop recently. I think in the U.S. you call it the Mankind Project. You know, in Canada we call it Men of Arts. It's a 3-day retreat for men only, and you know, it's like a warrior's journey to grow from a boy to a man. Because there's a lot of men that are 40 years old; they're still boys in a man's body, emotionally.
Yes.
And I discovered that of the 42 people in my crew, half of them had a stronger feminine energy, like me. Their best friend had always been women, because they could connect with their whole. And they discovered that this was also present in other men. It was perfectly allowed. And this has nothing to do with sexual orientation or anything else. You know, you could be a man and a hunter and have a very strong feminine side. It's perfectly allowed.
Yeah.
And I think for people to discover that this exists and to embrace it, it's very valuable for men, because it's very liberating. You know, I'm a warrior. I can, you know, I can fight the battle any day. I work really hard, but also I have a very strong nurturing artist. I'm a poet, you know, and I think both sides make me a complete person. So the goal to transform humanity, right now humanity is quite destructive because of this patriarchal. Some countries are led by extreme of these people. I'm not going to name who they are. And you can see sometimes what it creates. If anybody in leadership embraces both sides, I think they will find a lot of joy and the freedom to be who they really are at any one time. And maybe use the side of their personality that is more in tune. And at the end, you know, I'm going to offer our audience a few things. But one of the things I'm going to offer is for them to attend a free master class on feminine leadership as being a pillar of conscious leadership. You know, I have a whole master class on that. And I think if people only find out that this exists, this feminine energy, and it's not because you're a man that you have a feminine energy that you're gay, and there's nothing wrong with being gay, but, you know, sometimes there's judgment. And I think we have a lot of work to do. You know, even in the teams that I led, I did introduce this concept, and some men were really reluctant to even consider it. So we have a lot of work to do. Women are more naturally inclined, because if they were in business, they've already developed their masculine side. They have no choice, you know. So,
yep.
but we also need to encourage women to honor their feminine side. You know, not to give in too easy to being, because sometimes, very often, it is the feminine energy that we need. You know, the nurturing, and it's funny because we do have that. You know, I remember in some of the, you guys in the U.S., we've had some challenges, you know, the floods, the this, the that. You see some masculine leaders demonstrating very big feminine energy. Nurturing, caring, you know, this is the feminine side. And so there's time for both then. Even one of your famous generals in the U.S., MacArthur, is quoted. You know, I never met him, but I read. He says, compassion is the number one quality for a military leader, because we're leading people that most likely will get killed. So if I don't have compassion for them, how can I lead them? And this is like 50 years ago. So, and I'm not saying compassion is only for women, but it is more a feminine characteristic. Sorry I interrupted.
Absolutely. No, not at all. Well, and I will also say, which I'm sure you would agree with, it's important for us not to reduce the feminine to nurture. The feminine is also wild. It is creative. Yeah. It is intuitive. And it is where solutions come from in many ways. Solutions to problems come in feminine energy, feminine connectedness. So in addition to that, what would be considered the softer side, the feminine has a fire quality to it also. Mm-hmm. The feminine in physical form literally creates and sustains life. Mm-hmm. So that is an extraordinary kind of capacity that all of us have in us. And sometimes I think masculine leaders shy away from the feminine because they think nurturing is weak, which, first of all, it isn't. But the other thing that I sometimes try to introduce mm-hmm. people to is the aspect of the feminine that is around creativity and creation. Mm-hmm. Thought I'd throw that in there.
That's kind of cool because one of my good friends now, I collect wise people. You know, I always say I'm not wise, but I guess I'm starting to have some wisdom, but I collect really wise people that I can, you know, go and get wisdom from. And one of them is called Nilima Bhatt. She's from India. And she co-wrote mm-hmm. a book called Shakti Leadership with Raj Sisodia, the founder of Conscious Capitalism. And what I learned from her is about, you know, Shiva, Shakti. And, you know, in Asia, it's yin and yang. Shakti in India is the feminine energy, and Shiva is the masculine. If you go in pure Hinduism, Shiva is consciousness. Shakti is the creation in material life, you know. Shiva without Shakti cannot create anything. And Shakti without Shiva, you know, has no access to consciousness. So it's like, if you go a bit spiritual, it's like consciousness creating in 3D dimension what needs to be created through the Shakti. So yes, you know, and do we need to have more creativity to solve the problems that we have in business and in the world? You bet. You know, there's enough technology and money to fix all the problems. But we can't seem to find a way to do it. You know, we've never had more intelligence, we've never had more technology, we've never had more wealth. But, you know, and we are improving a few things, but if you look at the environment, we certainly are not. And in every country, you guys have, in the U.S., there are some social challenges, we have our own in Canada. But I agree with you that for any leader, you know, to embrace creativity, even if you only want to be performant, even if you don't have access to conscious leadership, I just want to bring my team to the best performance. I think creativity is essential.
So now that we've kind of picked through some of the mysteries of the universe and quantum theory mm-hmm. and connection to feminine and masculine and all the consciousness language, what we also know about you and where your credibility comes to the fore in addition to what you've already shared mm-hmm. is that you've had to have, you know, bad hires, and you've had to terminate team members, and you've had to have hard conversations in really tactical situations. Mm-hmm. So how does then this notion of effectively what I think you brought to your team, which is love, you know, mm-hmm. love, which is almost always sifted out of the corporate environment, but mm-hmm. to bring it in is transformational. How does love show up when you're trying to fire someone? What's a practical best practice? If I've got to fire someone next week or in a month or two, or I know that something's not going right and it's just not going to work out, how do I do that and still keep that sense of love and consciousness for both of us? What do I do?
Yeah, so before we get to the firing, so assuming the person didn't steal, kill, or did something illegal, let's say it's a performance problem. Before I fire anyone, I've always worked really hard to help them transform. You know, to create the space to make sure, you know, like a sign of love is also to clearly set expectations. This is my expectation for you, for what you give me in return, and I'll, you know, you will be paid and promoted. Often there's no clear expectation, so I make sure there's very clear expectation. When there is a significant performance gap, then there is an intervention, you know, a performance improvement plan. This is what we agree, you have 3 months to do it. And I did that. And very often it worked really well, and a few times it did not work really well. I found out the person, you know, one of my general managers in this big transformation I explained, was backstabbing me every day with their own staff. And at some point I found that out, confronted him, and fired him. And what we did to show love is to be very direct, you know, as to why we were doing things, to do it in a careful way, in a caring way, and to allow the person to do a graceful exit. You know, not to do a drama, and, you know, and, but to be honest, when I was fired once from a company, and it was not done like that. You know, I got in the morning at 8 a.m. as a senior guy. I left by the garage door with nothing, And my team didn't know why. And it was done, I don't think it was done from love. I think it was done from fear. And I've always tried to do it very differently. But, you know, I just want to make the point that I think everyone can transform. Not everyone does because, you know, first you need to be coachable. You know, when I led people or when I'm coaching people now, I make a coachable contract. Are you coachable? You know, I will bring you new wisdom. Are you willing to consider it before you reject it? And, you know, I went through that with my own son when he was 13, 14. You know, I'm an engineer. He's doing science. I'm trying to teach him. And everything I said was wrong. And he finally got that, you know, I will stop. But you're actually taking longer because there's somebody beside that has wisdom. And if you're willing to at least consider it, you may save time. And I've met a lot of people that are coachable, open mind. And I've met people that were at a fixed mindset, not coachable. And with that, when you want to win a championship, you want to transform a team, you know, at best, sometimes it's better to free them, to go somewhere else where they'll be more valuable. Because I also think, Shane, that everyone has a mission. Everyone has a special mission in life, which has nothing to do often with our education, you know. My mission, I've discovered after 30 years of work, was to help people transform. Took me a long time to discover it and then a bit longer to embrace it. And sometimes when somebody is stuck in a poor performing situation, there's a problem. There's a misalignment between their true talents and the skills needed for the job. They're not aligned to the mission. You know, the vision doesn't resonate with them. And so sometimes, even though it might seem that you're doing something bad to them, you may actually allow them to be catalyzed in something new. I went to meet the president that fired me 4 years ago. You know, he runs a big company here. And I went to thank him because he freed me from a company I would no longer want to work for. And he kind of gave me a kick in the bum to finally pursue my mission. And he agrees that what I'm doing now is what I'm meant to do. And if he didn't do that, I may still be in my old job earning good money, but truly unhappy. Because I find that sometimes a lot of us have an insight that we're meant to do something else. But, you know, you get stuck in mortgages, kids, payments for schools, and we don't have the courage to do it. And sometimes, in a funny way, the universe will get things done for us, and it could be through a firing. So very often, you know, we actually free people up to become who they truly are. So to answer your question, it's actually to do it with a lot of care.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, Stefan, this has been a great privilege and a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for taking the time. Where can listeners go to get access to your, I assume it's free, maybe it's not free, your masterclass, whatever it is. Where can they go to get access to that?
So the masterclass, I'll give you a link, Sean. People can go to my website, www.icfconsciousleadership.com. On there, you'll find tons of articles, videos, and podcasts that I did with a lot of these wise people that I collect. And I will also include for you a link to the masterclass. It's a one-hour masterclass about feminine leadership as a pillar to conscious leadership. And I recommend everyone to listen to it, not just the women, because men need it as much, if not more. and so far, I've given this as a conference to many people. 95% of the audience is always women, and they recognize it. And they're always asking me, you know, where are all the men? So hopefully we get some of the men listening here to attend. So this will be made available for free to everyone.
Thanks so much. Well, we appreciate it, Stefan. Thanks for your work in the world and for joining us on this call.
Been a great pleasure. Thank you, everyone.